From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Hitta Home Safety Products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Did you know that your detectors need to be replaced every 5 to 10 years? Hitta detectors feature enhanced sensing technology that reduces false alarms and fast alerts for more time to get out safely. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com and shop our great selection of Hitta safety products. Save big money
at Menards. Welcome to the award-winning Dear Lovejoy podcast. And today is...
Let me guess. Now, can I know about it? It's on the tip of my tongue. Is it a
special? And today's special is with Laurie from Slaves. And it was going to be Laurie and Isaac, but they're rock and roll. And Isaac didn't turn up.
So you got tour flu?
No. Do you know what? I have absolutely no idea why he didn't...
Maybe he just doesn't like you, Tim. Is that it? Do you think that could be it?
No, I think we got on well. But what I quite liked is they've just done the Radio 1 Live Lounge.
Yep.
They've just done a great version of Super Organisms. Everybody Wants to Be Famous. It was fantastic. And then they were on their way here. They came here. And then just Laurie turned up. Somewhere along the way, Isaac had disappeared. And I looked and I said to Laurie, "Where is Isaac?" And he goes, "Don't know." And that was it. And I just thought, just leave it at that. It's great. Right. I just thought it's just...
There are some nice pubs around here. You might have just stopped off. So I love the look of that one.
It was fine. So anyway, Laurie's great. I just really like him. And he's such a talented guy. You know, the band are great. I do like Slaves. Have you seen them live?
I haven't, I'm afraid.
Okay, very good. Very entertaining. And a lot of energy on that stage. Really good stuff. And not only that, Laurie's an artist, which is great. So he does all his paintings and he does his T-shirts and he does all that sort of stuff. So, you know, real talented guy. We go through all of it, everything he's doing at the moment. And he's doing a lot. And what I love about them is they really care about their fans. That sounds so cliche, but they genuinely sort of just give back all the time. They're so involved in everything they do. Yeah. And I really like that idea that they sort of started off by just trying to make some music and it's really hit off for them and it works. And they just, you know, they love doing it. They love the whole process from designing the album cover, from the videos. They get involved in absolutely everything. And I just think if I was in a band, that is what I'd be doing.
Yeah.
You? Just get involved in everything. It all looks fun to me.
Oh, yeah, I would want control over everything.
Yeah,
not in a control freak way, but I've always thought if I ever, you know, had a film made, I'd want to make the music as well. Right. Do you know what I mean? Like, write the music, sing the music, sing the theme tune, that thing. But I like that. It's the way, because I'm interested in all the parts of it.
Well, that's it. They love the whole creative process. That's fantastic. Anyway, let's hear what he has to say. This is Laurie from Slaves.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, write into Dear Lovejoy.
Laurie, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to my kitchen. Thank you very much for coming. Nice that it's rock and roll and only one of you showed up. Where's Isaac?
I'm not sure.
Not sure. Rock and roll, I like
something
that.
Something came up.
You've just, before I start, actually, can you just move your pop shield down a tiny bit? Otherwise we don't get to see your face, right? I bought you a present. Cool. I buy everyone a present.
Oh,
and
thanks.
And I've gone for something quite strange, but I think you might like this. I bought one.
Do I get Isaac's too?
Yeah, you get both of them. You can give this to Isaac's. And the reason why is it's apple cider vinegar. And I saw it today and I thought, you're just about to go on tour. Tour's hard work. I know it's hard work. I've done it because I was a merch guy. And I used to flog T-shirts years ago and it's hard work. So this is apple cider vinegar. And we get celebrities on Sunday brunch. They always talk about doing this. You have to do a shot of this a day. And it's rich in natural minerals, vitamins and enzymes. For thousands of years, AVC has been used to regulate blood sugar levels to aid weight loss. You don't need that. As a natural...
I probably do need that.
A natural anti-inflammatory. You'll need that after you've been on tour for a while. And it's been said to reduce pain of arthritis. All those sort of things are on there. So,
are we going
to
do a shot then?
All right. Let me get a shot glass and we can do some.
So who did you go on tour with selling merch?
I've done Crowded House.
Oh.
Prong, thrash metal band. Do you know them?
No, I don't.
American thrash metal band. Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, Pearl Jam.
You did Pearl Jam?
Yeah. Well, so, I didn't really get to meet them, though, because it was mainly touring sort of stuff.
Should I pour these out?
Yeah, go on. Just pour some. I don't think we need a big shot of it.
Because is this just purely... I mean, firstly, it's a very thoughtful present. Thank you. Because can you cook with it, or is it literally just a remedy?
I don't know. I just know that people keep doing this, so I thought...
I love vinegar.
Do you?
And I actually
it's
was
not
thinking...
too much, though. It's not a whole shot. It's just a spoonful, she said.
Say
to me.
When?
I said, wow, wow, yeah, that's it.
Cool.
One of those each. Okay.
Right.
Let me get mine. Hold on.
Party time.
All right. To Isaac.
Nostrovia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
I like that.
That's quite nice, isn't it?
I used to drink the, you know, those little sachets of malt vinegar at birthday parties, like when no one was looking, I'd...
Really?
I remember doing it, yeah.
It's probably really good for you now.
I appreciate that. I'm always getting ill on tour.
Well, there you go. Do that. A shot of that a day, apparently.
Thank you very much.
And that'll make you feel good. Read the label. Willie's, it's called. Anyway, you just come back from Radio 1. You've just done Radio 1, so thank you very much for coming around here. You did your live lounge. A super
organism
who came on Sunday Brunch. They're brilliant. What made you choose that? Did you just like the song?
So the playlist, you have really strict parameters. You're only allowed to do songs that have been on the A list for the past year and or the B list. And in honesty, like a lot of the sort of pop stuff isn't mine and Isaac's bag. I think so. It was also when you hear these songs that are co-written by five or six different artists, I think you can tell. And so like songs start and stop a lot at the moment, or like different bits come in and you're like, well, where did that come from? It's kind of like the way of pop music. But because we're so simple, I think we need a more classic sounding song to do. And that song was like, is like a bit like verse, chorus,
right?
And it works really well. I also love, I always want to try and cover something that has a good sentiment. And I just like, I love the band. I love how it's like a collaborative and they've got an artist as a member, and also just the meaning behind the song, Everyone Wants to Be Famous. It feels like it's something I can get behind.
When they came on, they did an acoustic version on Sunday Brunch, and halfway through they opened cans of Coke and poured it as part of the music. It was just, it was, if you get a chance to look at it, it was really good.
Yeah,
they're nice people as well, really good.
It's good to see like good, nice people doing well. It's like, it's proper music.
Yeah.
It really
well,
is.
Well, saying that, I don't want you to comment too much here because I thought you'd get yourself in hot water. But you know, it's great that you're playlisted on Radio 1, isn't it? When did that first happen? I'll tell you why I say that is, look, I'm an old man now, and you know when you look at your parents and you go, and they sort of, my parents hated punk and all that sort of stuff, and I thought something would come along which was so outrageous that I'd go, I can't listen to the young people's music.
Yeah.
And it's not actually something that's outrageous. It's what do they call those things? Vocoders, or what do they call them?
Like auto-tune and vocoders, yeah.
It's auto-tune, which is the thing that just drives me nuts. And as soon as you'd finished playing on Radio 1, the next song came on, it was auto-tune. I was like, oh my God, this is the stuff that freaks me out. I can't do it.
I'm the same as well. Yeah, I agree with you. It's and the trends of music are just like, at the moment, it's so homogenized. There are so many people making the same sounding music and it blows my mind.
Yeah, but the thing that people don't realise is that, because I've worked in music radio, is people just sit around the table making, that's how it works. There's no method to it. You sit around and you go, should we put this on the playlist? And that's it.
And that's the thing that is happening more and more. Like, it's sort of, yeah, I don't want to get in trouble again.
Yeah.
But also just like, I don't know who the voice of our generation is anymore. Like the John Peels and...
Yeah.
But it's also because... people aren't listening. It's all about streaming and the internet. How do you make people listen? And whereas before, people like John Peel and the radios had captive audiences.
Yeah.
So
how did you feel when you found out you were first playlist on Radio 1? It must have been an amazing thing.
Yeah. I don't think I understood at first. I didn't realise, I was a bit naive and didn't realise that things were playlisted. I had this vision that DJs went in and decided what they wanted to play.
Nah.
So that was the first thing. It was like, what is a playlist? And then you found out how significant it was, and it was incredible. And it was like, how does that happen to us? And so BBC Introducing was the way that we got on our first playlist, because they used to have the BBC Introducing playlist. They've got something similar now, but it was different back then, and we got played like once a day for a week. And then it just incrementally, like as we kept releasing songs, we get stepped up and up and up until eventually we got 2 weeks on the A-list with a song at the end of the first album campaign. And it was just like a whirlwind. So before, I didn't even know about playlists. And now, like, everything's about playlists. Mm. And it's weird how the purity evaporates so quickly.
There was a time where, when I worked at XFM, it was, they let me have a few selections of myself, but generally it was chosen on a playlist. And it was all right for a while. And then after a little while, I started going, God, I'm playing the same songs over and over again. And then someone said to me once, they research well. And I was like, Jesus, what the hell does that mean? Who are they asking about the research? And what I quite liked was playing music I didn't like as well. And at the end of it, saying, I don't really like that. Do you? And then, and then get people talking about it. Because I think that's what the great thing about music is. I just said to you, I went on tour with a band called Prong. I went there, turned up the first night, thought, this is the most horrific thing I've ever heard. By the end of the tour, I was like, I love Prong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's good that you get that sort of influence.
Well, I think you used to learn how to love a band. Like, I remember buying CDs from HMV based on the album artwork.
Yeah.
And, or like, if it looked heavy, because I was just obsessed with what's going to be the most outrageous thing to annoy my parents. And you'd put it on and you'd go, I hate this, but you'd already committed to the, like, what, £10 it cost. So then you just keep listening and keep listening. The first time I heard London Calling, I was disappointed because it wasn't what I expected.
Really?
Because I came from an age of like nu metal, and everything on Kerrang and MTV2 was super heavy, like Limp Bizkit and Rage Against the Machine. So when you put The Clash on, they actually sound quite tame.
Reggae.
Yeah, they sound, and I was confused. I was like, this isn't punk, because I didn't know what it was. So then, like, I had to persevere and keep listening to the album, and that's where I missed those days, because people don't have to, like, invest in your band at all. They listen to you for 20 seconds and it's over.
Yeah.
Yes or no. And then also, like you said, like, research. Does this research well? Do people enjoy it when they're listening to it? I don't know. All the edges going from music.
I remember Noel Gallagher once saying, fucking research, something like that. And he went, if we relied on research all the time, Jimi Hendrix would have never happened. And I just thought that was really interesting. Because, Jimi Hendrix was way out there when he was around, I suppose. And, you need people is to take risks as well on music, don't you? Otherwise, you'll never get Kate Bush either. You'll never get any of it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I don't know where those... Because I still maintain that pop music was more interesting when I was a kid. Like, on one hand, you'd have someone like All Saints, for example, but then at the same time, you would have, like, guitar bands, like, right in the front of it as well. So, obviously, like, the Britpop thing.
Yeah.
So, you'd have, like, Oasis, like, on the radio, and then you'd have All Saints, and then you'd also have, like Spice Girls.
Yeah.
I don't know, it felt like pop music was, and even people like, do you remember The Corrs?
Yeah.
They used to get played on the radio all the time. And so there was like a real varied, what is pop music? And whereas now, pop music's got a definite sound, and I think a lot of people do it.
Wow. But when you started, did you start with the idea that, oh, we're going to be a successful band on Radio 1 and all that, or did you just start because you wanted to mess about having playing some music?
So, like, I've been in bands ever since I could play guitar. It's just, I can't remember, I've been trying to work out why, but I've just always wanted to be a musician, and there's no real clear reason. It's just instinct, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not a family thing, and so I've always wanted to be in bands. And then when I got to the age of about, when you get to a conscious age and maybe like 15, 16, I started like writing. The band I was in was more like indie, whereas I much preferred like heavier music. But I think we were all making that music because we thought, if we're going to be successful, we have to tone it down a little bit. Then I joined Isaac's band and thought, this is the band that I'm going to do well in and get signed. It was an amazing band, and they'd already been offered deals, and they had a management deal and stuff like that.
What were they called?
They're called Bareface, but right. Spelt B-A-R-E, face. Right. Weirdly enough, actually, we were about to walk on stage at Reading and this year, and the like intermittent DJ that plays in between the bands had like was playing a Bareface track.
Wow.
And I thought, I looked at Isaac, so I wasn't sure about how he'd react, and he loved it. So they were my favourite band. Thought we were going to get signed, and then the band imploded. Never join your favourite band. That's a good tip. it was rubbish. And so that was it. I was like 17 or 18, and I just was like, we're never going to get do it now. Let's just make a band that's fun. For some reason, there was an immense amount of pressure because it's the age you have to go to university, stuff like that. What, all of your peers are leaving, and all I wanted to do was be in a band, but we hadn't been successful yet. Whereas, like, it feels like when, especially with bands, people like One Direction, you see in the media, you have to, it's getting younger and younger. So we started a band that we thought everyone was going to hate, and we'd never even be able to play on a stage, but it was fun, and then it all started happening.
And how quickly?
So it was about, from the first gig to getting signed was like 2.5 years.
So long enough to think this is not working.
Yeah, we slogged it out, and there was one summer where I heard various reports through other people that Isaac was not taking it seriously, and he was ready to just jack it in, because he was quite happy. He was training to be a care in the community worker. Like, he would cycle around to people's houses and do their needs, whether if it was making their lunch or cleaning or like getting them out of bed and more hands-on stuff like showering them. And he was like really happy in that respect. And I was like, right, let's go. We're going to drive all the way to Cornwall for one gig and then come back. So there was a tough period where it felt like it was all falling on deaf ears.
You do hear about these bands though, and they sort of say, yeah, we've been at it for ages. You know, it's been a good 6 months. And you're like, wow. You know, because people can make it pretty rapidly with the internet these days, can't they?
Yeah, and I think it gives people a jaded view of what they sort of maybe are entitled to or deserve. Yeah. Like, this weird thing keeps happening to me at the moment, because we're doing promo and we're doing signings and we're meeting fans. The expectation of young people is so much higher than it was when I was their age. So even though it was like, it's already 10 years ago I was like making my first bands, but you meet kids and they're like, here's our demo, can you listen to it? Once you've listened to it, can you email us and give us feedback? And then because they have access to us, and you see in your like Instagram messages or that you don't open, like, what did you think of the album? And I'm just like, that's crazy. Like, for me, the idea of even meeting a band I liked was so far off. But then to put all these like pressures on them to be like, once you've listened to it, email me. And you're just like, wow.
Though one day I was out and I was at this bar thing, and I had in my bag, I had one of my showreels, and I saw across the room Jonathan Ross, and eventually I thought, I just got to do it. So I walked up to him. I'm a massive fan of Jonathan Ross. Walked up and said, Jonathan, I've got a showreel here. Would you look at it and then tell me what you think? And he went, why would I do that? I don't want any more competition. No. He laughed and then walked off. And I thought, do you know what? That is so cool.
That's brilliant.
I love that. Yeah. I don't want competition. but you seem to have fun as a band though, right? That seems to be the... I interviewed Suggs on this podcast not so long ago. He goes, I said, got any advice for anyone? Any bands coming up? And he goes, yeah, have fun. And he said, too many of them don't have fun. Have fun. And he said, Madness, we've relied on fun to get, and we've, you know, they've been going forever, haven't they?
But they're a band I also see ourselves aligning with quite a lot. Accidental comedy aspect that we never intended to have. And our videos,
definitely.
Some of our song, like some of the lyrics and stuff. Yeah, we said really early on that the minute it stops being fun, we'll stop. And that was like our... That was the sort of rule we applied to our band, and it's always been pretty good since then.
Yeah, because it's funny, because the first time I saw you was a live thing, at a festival thing, and you have, I mean, the energy in your band's amazing, and I was like, wow, it really blew me away. I was watching, you know, stage diving and all that sort of stuff. And then when I got to know you guys, when they said, you're coming on Sunday brunch, I was like, well, this is going to be interesting. And you're just really lovely guys and wanted to join in and have fun. It just makes it a really nice band to be around, you know, and it just seems like you're having a good time as well, which is always, I think, so pleasurable to see.
Yeah, one of the most poignant things Isaac ever said to me, because I always say this as well, Isaac was a year older than me in school years, and though that doesn't mean anything now, when you're like 16, 17, it's quite a big deal. You're quite impressionable to your people in your peer group that you view as elders. So I always felt like Isaac was like the bigger brother. And we came off stage at our first ever show, and I started going, oh, this bit wasn't like that and that bit. And I maybe said two sentences, and then he just went, once a show's done, never go over it again. It's done. That's it. There's no point in analysing and being upset about your performance. It was great. We had fun. That's it.
Yeah.
And so many tours we go on, you watch bands walk off stage and like, start having a go at each other or say that the crowd wasn't good or that they messed their part up. And we always can tell bands that aren't necessarily in it for the right reasons, maybe, or bands that are struggling when they're doing that, when they're having meltdowns over their performance, because you should leave it all out there. Kind of like anything, like football or like any sport, you've got to leave yourself out there. And that was one of the most poignant things that stuck with us to now. So you won't ever really, if you find us having a go at each other ever, we're really a dark place.
Yeah, I mean, I remember meeting a band once and having a chat with them. And you're right, you've got to do it for the right reasons. You've got to be in it. And I remember saying to them, are you going to come on Soccer M? That's when I was Soccer M. They'd been on before. I said, you can come back on Soccer M soon. They loved it. And they went, oh, we're not in promo at the moment. I was like, Jesus Christ, that's rock and roll for you, not in promo at the moment. Yeah. I was like, meanwhile, people like Ray Winston and Noel Gallagher and all that are just used to wander on when they felt like it. And I was like, come on, you know, you're in the business to have some fun. You know, if you can go on a TV show every now and then, take the chance.
Yeah, all of our best stuff's been out of promo. When we first came on Sunday Brunch, it was out of promo.
Were you?
Yeah, it was like the year after the album had come out, we were like slap bang in the middle of nothing.
Yeah.
And it just...
Sorry to mention Suggs again, but he came on Sunday Brunch once. He always comes on hungover. He's always had a party the night before. But, you know, not that he's always hungover, but there was a definite party. And he arrived and he was hungover. And whoever it was who was supposed to be performing at the end of the show, they'd got a sore throat. So Suggs went, I'll do it. And I went, seriously? He goes, if I can get the keyboard player up, I'll tell you what, Mike, you know, he goes, I will do it. He goes, this is what it's about. I can't believe it. We get to perform live on a Sunday morning on TV. This is what I want to do. And I just thought, that's so lovely hearing that.
That's how I feel. Every day we do stuff, that's how I feel. Even whether it was being in the Live Lounge earlier, I still remember my copy of the Live Lounge CD that I used to put on that had like the covers on, and I'd drive around in my car listening to it, like summer holidays listening to it. And then when you see yourself doing it, it's like, wow. And that was the same with Sunday Brunch. It was like a massive thing in my house. Like, my parents would watch it every Sunday.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of contemporaries, and I know a lot of bands, and they don't seem to seize those opportunities
right
as much. And I was like, I just want to go on there and have fun.
Which you did.
Yeah.
Well, you came on there and started talking about cooking salsa up, and you were making it, weren't you, before the show? I remember.
Yeah. It's like those weird chats you have with interviewers for shows.
Yeah.
Well, not interviewers, researchers. And I didn't realise it happened. They ring you up and they chat to you for like an hour about what you've been up to. And it's like, that's one of my life things I've realised this year. I think I've become more self-reflective upon like having a child and stuff. And you think more. It's like, the more you put into anything like that, the more you're going to get out.
Yeah.
So with that day on Sunday Brunch, I was like, oh yeah, I like to cook. I make guacamole. If you put effort in, you do see rewards.
The viewers love it.
Yeah.
The viewers absolutely love it. And they especially love it if it's out of context, because you turn up, you know, you got your tattoos, you're in a band which plays heavy punk or rock music, whatever you want to describe it as. And then you're going, I'll make a nice salsa. It's like, yeah. This is absolutely brilliant. And then on your Twitter feed as well, you've got, what was it you said the other way? Sandwiches should always be cut once, diagonally. Okay, thanks.
that was me.
Who decided that?
There's always a big, like, feedback to our tweets, and everyone always assumes everything's Isaac, but I do a lot of the tweets. No, it was a choice that I made a few years ago. My mum was a like straight across the vertical or the horizontal, sorry. But then the bread, there's the like crust is too there. Yeah. When you do it diagonally, you get like, I like to eat a bit of the crust, then you've got this huge huge middle section.
Yeah.
And
I'm actually with you, even though I did respond by saying there are, you know, you can't cut a bagel and stuff like that.
I saw them, but, yeah, the unhelpful comments. Yeah. I liked the guy that there was, I don't know if you saw it, I think I retweeted it. There was a guy that was like, sandwiches should always be cut into thirds, and he'd like sort of like, he'd done like the peace symbol.
Oh, nice.
Across it. That was a really inventive way.
That's good. Yeah. It is true though about food, because, you know, I when I slice a cucumber, I don't do it in rounds. I always do it in, you know, like you go long ways a bit, sort of, not really long ways, but sort of, I can't.
Diagonal.
Yeah, diagonal. That's
yeah, because it's prettier, it looks nicer.
It's just a nicer thing to eat, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like that, and a sandwich cut that way.
My mum cuts spring onions diagonally. Oh, I still haven't got it, like the knack of it, but
much better.
It does look better.
Much better, yeah.
And when you're eating, lots of people don't like salads, and I believe that's because they don't chop it. A chopped salad is like incredible. Like if you take all the elements and make it all bite-sized pieces and then toss it all up,
yeah,
that's way better than a huge bed of like lettuce with a few things balanced on top. Because yeah,
like a hot, like a, one of those whole cherry tomatoes which you could just
you don't know what to do with.
No, because they're gonna burst.
It's a real thing, and I have these thoughts all the time, and Twitter's been really interesting for me because Isaac does the really random long comedy joke spiels, but I always have these like thoughts, like the sandwich cutting thing. And there are, in my head, I'm like, if I was ever a stand-up comic, this is the kind of stuff I'd put in scripts.
Yeah.
I like want, that's what my voice in my head's saying to me when I'm wandering around the supermarket. I think about things on like, or like, I recently, three times this week, I've gone to walk around someone who's walking too slowly on the pavement and then they veer into me. Like they, it's almost like they can sense I'm approaching, so they cross my path. And like the other day, it happened twice. I was like, I must have looked like a freak trying to get around this guy.
And you're turning into Jerry Seinfeld, going, "Well, this is a good bit. This is a good skit.
Yeah,
I can
in my
do
head,
this. I can turn this into it."
So I'm never going to have the skill to be a stand-up.
Well, I don't know. You're going to have to do something one day, because I was thinking about you. Your energy is so mad on stage. You know, it's. You're going to have to burn, like the sun, you'll burn out one day.
Yeah.
You're not going to have to do that. So you're going to have to start writing some ballads eventually.
We've written a couple on this record, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah. Do you think about that? Because it's quite, your act, you're a great live act, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so.
No, you are. You are.
It's impressive.
That is the one, yeah, because there's two of you.
Yeah.
And the noise is phenomenal. And the energy you put in. And I mean, that's why I was blown away the first time I saw you. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. And then sort of bothered investigating you after that, which is the way.
That's another point about playlists and stuff, is that I genuinely believe we're a band that you have to see live. And even my mum will admit that our music's not to her taste, or maybe it wasn't to her taste. And then when she first came to a gig, I remember her saying to me, "I get it now."
Yeah.
And our whole career has been based off people going, "I get it now." Like people coming to see us live. So it's trying to get those people's gigs.
Yeah. Do you think you're outsiders in the music world at the moment?
Yeah. I think we're insiders to the more outsiders, and we're outsiders to the insiders. We're like treading this line where the people that are like proper punks are like, "You're fakes," but we're in it, and we've put three albums out on a major label, which is just unheard of. I've watched so many talented artists get dropped over the years, and I'm like, we're still here. What's going on?
Is there pressure if you put the word punk in anything? Is there pressure then that you got to live up to the word punk?
Yeah, it's funny because we never put the word punk into anything, and then I'm watching people on Twitter slag us off for not being real punks and like getting annoyed about it, and then remembering that we never viewed ourselves as punk.
Mm.
We just had an influence that came from that. It's a problem with pigeonholing yourself into a label,
yeah,
like being this or being rock or being indie. It's just not very helpful.
No, that's why when I spurred earlier, I was trying to describe you, and I thought, that's not probably a good thing to do. But every time you read anything about you, they call you punk, don't they? That's the thing.
And what annoys me about that, though, is that the people like your parents who hated punk the first time around, they're never going to give it a go.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think it is. It's something different. I don't know if they'll look back. Maybe people aren't as creative now, but I feel like if this scene was 30 years ago and all the newspapers were better and the magazines, they would have given our like genre a name by now.
Yes,
but the journalism isn't the same as it used to be in regards to music, because yeah, newspapers don't sell.
Yeah, music journalism sort of gone a bit, hasn't it? I suppose it ends up in the broadsheets and stuff, and maybe the tabloids. So but you're very, as a band, you're very inclusive with your, you take control of everything, don't you? That's what I quite like. You say you're signed with a major label. However, you're involved in the videos, the album covers. You even do your own fanzine where you open source all your music, don't you, basically?
Yeah.
You give away everything, how you write it, how, you know, so everyone can play along at home, basically. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I did on the new record. That was like this idea that I had going into the studio, just because in the past I'd heard other bands being very secretive about what they use and what they don't use. Whereas I'm a big believer that I could play Isaac's drums and know how to play it, but the way he hits them is what makes it sound so good. And yeah. like, people could play my guitar parts through what I use on my guitar, but because they haven't got like my hands, it won't sound the same.
Yeah.
The way everyone does things is different. Even if you play it exactly the same, like the pressure, your fingers, all of that stuff. So I was just like, well, I'll just give them everything and they can do their own versions of it, and just being open, and we've got nothing to hide. And it's I wanted to like give away something as well. I wanted it to be like free or available really cheaply, just as that's the kind of thing I would have loved. And I wanted it to look rough, and like I made it on my living room table, like cutting and pasting the bits. It looks like I made it myself, but I like the fact that you're buying like a really slick album with all the nice artwork, and then you get this rough and ready zine with I really like physical things, and I think that's disappearing a bit in our
when I was speaking to the music industry years ago, my mates in it, and I was saying it's becoming harder and harder to sell music because you're actually not getting anything you can touch, and they were going, no, this was years ago, no, don't worry about that. Fergal Sharkey and all his mates were going, we're gonna go around and sue everyone who's not. Now, we were discussing this with Rakasti the other day, the streaming industry's now taken off, and it's kind of a good thing. But it's nice for, I suppose, for an artist like yourself, if you're doing everything, including the albums, and, you know, and your albums are physical because they've got things like a great picture from Jürgen Teller on the front.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Very surreal. So I wasn't that aware of, I knew like, I was aware of images he'd taken, but wasn't aware of him as a photographer. And we've got a lady at the label called Dan Sanders, who is she's like the creative virgin. So if anyone's making albums and they need help, she can help out on like getting artwork together, whether it's formatted or helping with like photographers. So we had this list of photographers, and we met with a couple, and she put him on as just like a complete like long shot. And she went to his agency where she knew someone that worked there, and they were like, no chance, there's no way you're getting him. We had like I think like a fifth of what his costs were, like as our budget. And so he listened to our band and was just like, yeah, I want to do it. And I'm pretty sure we were the first sort of band he'd shot in years, because he's been doing like massive like campaigns with huge brands like Burberry, and also doing like proper art shows as well in major galleries. And so he just liked our band and was like, yeah, I'll do it. And he came to Isaac's house, took photos of us on the toilet and in the bath.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, he's sort of like this huge photographer, isn't he? He's been around since the 80s.
He was on tour with Nirvana, and he shot her name slips my mind now. Basically, loads of album covers, like ones you, Sinead O'Connor, he did her album cover.
Right, okay. Yeah, I was just looking at all the things here. He's done quite a lot of stuff. God, you're in good company there, aren't you?
Yeah. So it's like a real privilege that he deemed us worthy of his time.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I mean, but, you know, as I say, it's so lovely when you've got a band who's involved in absolutely everything, from the album cover to everything. There was so many, when I was on XFM, there were so many bands who just said, oh, we let our music do the talking. I was like, I want a bit more than that.
Yeah.
I went, can you not give us a bit of an image and something else? And you know, you're even doing your own TV, aren't you? Slaves TV, which is just funny little sketches and sketches and skits and stuff, which is, they're funny, aren't they?
It was a joke sort of thing that we started, but it came from when I was younger. I loved watching on the road tour diaries of bands. I wanted to be close to bands that I admired. And there are a lot of people that can't get to gigs, like if you live in the countryside, or like even where I was from in Kent, like bands didn't stop in Kent because it's too close to London. But when you're 14 or whatever, I'm not going to be able to go to London on a school night.
Yeah.
So on the road and behind the scenes diaries, even if people don't deem them that valuable, they're like a massive way for your band to like to communicate with your fans, like have a dialogue. And so I love the fact that people get a sense of our band. And I think even with this album, through our music videos, we're starting to like get our personalities across as we want them more than ever. Like actually people are understanding what we're about. And the balance between humour and when to be serious and when to let the music do the talking. Mm. And I really feel like this album, we've hit a sweet spot with all of those things.
Tunbridge Wells is where you're from, yeah? Around that area.
It's where Isaac's from. It's where the band, my own family, were taking the mick out of me the other day because they were like, oh, we're from Tunbridge Wells, but I'm actually from Maidstone. So I'm about an hour away from Isaac.
Where's that, further north or further west?
It's literally the... Tunbridge Wells is the... Maidstone is the county town of Kent because it's so central. It's called Mid-Kent.
Right.
It's like bang in the middle of Kent. And then Tunbridge Wells is more to the west, northwest.
It's nearly France. I was looking at it the other day.
We're closer to... I think it's quicker from Kent to Paris in some ways than it is to... It can be. We're like... That's why I always feel a bit disconnected with the rest of the country when you talk about where you're from. Like, all the northern bands used to be like, well, you're just Londoners, you're southerners, you're lucky, you've got London. In reality, we're like, we have a lyric in one of our songs and it's like, in the shadow of the city, because that's how I feel like people from Kent are. You're sort of, and since the only way is Essex, people are like, oh, what, like Essex?
Yeah.
The amount of northerners that don't know about Kent, or like people from the Midlands, they've never heard of Kent.
Yeah, it's one of those places, isn't it, that it's
a nowhere town.
Yeah, you sort of look longingly at London. I'd had this sort of question about that, because it's as you say, it's sort of London, but it's not London, because it's Kent, it's miles away.
Yeah.
I came from Watford area, the Rickmans and Chorleywood out that way, but we were on the tube, so we could get in quite easily. Tunbridge Wells is not on the tube, is it?
No,
or Maidstone.
It's a long way.
It's a train. So, yeah, so it's kind of that lost area. So what's it like growing up somewhere like that then?
It's peaceful.
See,
the thing is, Tunbridge Wells is a beautiful, amazing place that I could live in. It's got so much going on still. You've got the Forum music venue, which was like sort of massively part of us getting out of Kent. But Maidstone's bleak. There's just nothing there. I had a nice upbringing. I'm not claiming that I came from a rough area or anything. I went to, you know, good schools, and I had a... My parents had a nice house, and we were in the country. We were like 10 minutes in the countryside outside of Maidstone. But the actual town of Maidstone is just, there's nothing. Mm. There's no music venue. There was never one growing up. You used to do sort of like Battle of the Bands at like youth sort of centres and stuff like that. But there was no one ever came to Maidstone for anything.
Mm.
It's quite funny now, because Jules Holland is filmed in Maidstone Studios.
How is it?
So you get all these huge artists staying in Maidstone, but there's nothing there. And now all the high streets closing down, everything's starting to board up. And
all high streets are like that, though.
We were going into, because they built this like sort of shopping centre thing about 10 years ago, and it was like all shiny, and you had all your brands, and you could do all your shopping there. But I live in Brighton, so I've got everything there as well, and I lived in London before. But me and my girlfriend were wandering around Maidstone, and we went into three different like stores to buy different things, and they were all like, oh no, we don't have any here. You'll have to go to Bluewater. So everyone in Kent, like their trips out are like going to Bluewater. And that's what my childhood was like. It was.
I think people don't realise when you come from a town, which isn't a major city like London or Manchester or Birmingham or something like that, that it can get a bit boring. I mean, me and my brother and my friends, we used to often just hang out around the tube station waiting to get off.
Yeah.
The only reason that sticks to my mind, because I remember my parents saying, what have you done today? I said, sat by the station. And why'd you do that? Because we sit and wait if anyone interesting gets off, you know what I mean? Then you've got something to do. It's like...
But then the thing that I did like about growing up where I did is like, if I talk to my girlfriend and her family who grew up in Crystal Palace, there was so much going on. I think it almost... They weren't aware of how good it was.
Yeah. Well,
so they weren't... I was out riding like my BMX for... I would go sort of like my the sort of radius I'd go in, I'd go like 10 miles away from my house. Because when you're young, you just cycle and cycle.
Very true.
And like, I'd go and build forts in the woods, or like do more sinister things. And like we'd get chased because we just set off bangers in a park. Uh-huh. And I had that real, I'm like, me and Isaac call it the last of the tree climbers. Whereas if you went, those people that grew up in like central London, maybe they didn't do that. So I had a happy sort of childhood, and then the teenage years when you start going to school and you start becoming aware of what you're into, there's just nothing there. And I thought I was being a bit critical of where I was from, but I finally went back after, hadn't been to Maidstone town in like 2 years, and I went there like 2 weeks ago, and I just felt depressed.
I do think a lot of the town's shopping centres and stuff, the high streets, they're getting depressing. We've got to do something about it, because they're just turning into charity shops, estate agents, and coffee shops.
There's like five Costas in every town.
Nail salons as well. There's a few of those. And that's kind of all it is now. And I think it's depressing. There must be a way that we can make them come alive again, because they were so important for us all to have a place you can meet and a community, don't you think?
Yeah, and Maidstone is just nightclubs now. There's like 10 nightclubs, but there's not one music venue. There's not a single place that like can host bands. Like, we keep trying to put on a show in Maidstone as a homecoming, and there's not an appropriate venue to do it at. It just seems mental.
I do want to say though that's become the nature of the world. Okay, I'm going to sound like such an idiot.
It's true,
here,
yeah.
But it's all about making money. So nightclubs for me when I was a kid were about dressing up and music. And we used to start with Rare Groove, then went to Acid House, and it was just fantastic. And then suddenly it became about VIP bars and Grey Goose and footballers. And it was like, and you know, people like that. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this is horrific. You know, you used to have enough money to go out for a night. And I feel sorry for those guys like Philip Salon and all those people who put on those amazing club nights years ago, because they didn't make any money. Mm. You know, all the ones where, I mean, I'm not old enough for this, but all the New Romantics and all that sort of scenes, the people who put those nights on were putting them on because it was about art and creativity. Now it's about Grey Goose, as I say. It's about how much money you can make. And it's the same, I suppose, with the venues. They can make more money out of getting people in and playing a bit of disco music than getting a live band on.
Yeah,
it's harder.
Yeah, place opened up in Maidstone and it was like doing teasers and it was like live music venue, and I was so excited, and I was like emailing my agents to try and find out, and then it did open and it was just DJs only. Mm. But they'd said they were going to be a live music venue.
Yeah, I suppose all you need though in it, a lot of the time, is a bit of a backing track and a vocal, I suppose. That's how yeah. some of it works. Also, being a punker, are you conscious that everyone, well, the word punk being used, sorry, that everyone wants social commentary off you? Is that something, I know you do that in some of your songs, but is that something that you find pressure with?
Yeah, I think I was quite sort of upfront with Isaac about this album, because I feel like we'd done two whole albums of social commentary that bands can keep going on about how sort of shit everything is, but there comes a point where you have to be able to turn around and offer a solution, otherwise you're just moaning like everyone else. So the pressure to have social commentary is quite, it's a tough one, because it's really important that people are able to talk about how they feel, but also at the same time, I don't want to preach to anyone at the moment. I feel like that's done, everything is like set up having a go at people. So our songs are always like, they're always based around social commentary, about documenting what we see. Yeah, it's hard though, the pressure to talk about it as well and say it eloquently. Some people can just deliver it so well, and I know what I feel and what I mean. But the more interviews you do, and when you say things that go down wrong, you start getting more and more self-conscious about it.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Everyone wants to pick anything you want, any sort of social commentary they want to pick. Oh, we do it on this podcast all the time. I interview so many people about it, and I finish every podcast by going, why did I say that? Everyone thinks I'm so stupid. Or, you know, it's a tough thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's why the first song on our new album, The Lives They Wish They Had, is like Isaac's finest hour of social commentary in a song. I feel like it beats all of our previous work put together in one. Just his lyrics sort of talking about the Instagram generation.
Yeah.
It's also really important that people realize it's directed ourselves as well.
Right.
Like, we are the people taking pictures of our food. I think everyone's guilty of doing it.
Yeah.
It's commenting on it. It's almost just like documenting it, not even saying if it's right or wrong, it's just having a consciousness about it.
You're also looking forward to AI as well, aren't you?
Yeah, that song. But it's interesting with all of that, because like, I think when we wrote the song Artificial Intelligence, people think like, oh, that's not happening, but like self-checkouts in supermarkets.
Oh, honestly, have you listened to the Elon Musk Joe Rogan podcast?
No, I need
to. Do yourself a favor, but when you're going out on tour, listen to that, because I've been saying it for ages. I listen to a lot of this stuff. We actually had Plan B on. He's written the whole concept album about AI taking over the world and all that sort of stuff. And there was another band we had on recently as well. But people are starting to look at it. And Elon Musk has said, look, the genie's out of the bottle. There's not a chance to save humanity anymore. It's gone.
Yeah.
Because it's learning quicker than us. It's more intelligent than us. But he's not down on it. He says, we've got to come to some conclusions what we're going to do with it. But you know, it's there now. It is absolutely happening. And he just says that even by having a telephone on you, a phone, like a smartphone, sorry, on you, you've got an amazing memory now, and you can do any sum anyone puts at you, and you can find out any fact on anything. You know, it's incredible.
That's why I think it's really also important for, I mean, I'm quite jaded about school because I hated it so much, but starting to put more focus on creativity again. Whereas when I was at school, everything, anyone doing music or art or theatre or anything like that was a DOS subject.
Yeah.
It's like you're saying, everything, the computers are going to be learning quicker than we are. So actually, things that are pure, like creativity, because they will be able to teach artificial intelligence to make music, but people won't want to listen to that necessarily as much as something that someone's made purely. So I think kids need to be pushed again back into the creative subjects, because there is so much more you can do with creativity.
But you know, that's not the way the education system's going at the moment.
No, it's going the opposite
way. Yeah, it's going absolutely the opposite way. They're just, it's in an exam factory. We've discussed it a lot on here. It's just, I've got kids going through the school thing at the moment, and you'll see it when it happens to you. You start going, Jesus Christ, what are they doing? They're just trying to memorize facts here. Where's the creativity? You know, as you say, it's school seems really old-fashioned to me.
I feel like I proved everyone wrong at school as well, because they all said, you're not... All of, I don't know any of my friends that have just gone, yeah, I've got a degree, got my job, got this. They're all like pulling their hair out, massive debts, did exactly what everyone told them to do, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
It actually took me going, I think you're all of you adults are wrong, I'm going to go and do this.
And what a life you're having now.
Yeah. But no one told you that this is possible.
No. Yeah, very true. Yeah. Well, you're a two-piece. Have you ever contemplated being more than just two of you? Because it's kind of an unusual idea, isn't it?
Yeah, so when we started, we were trying to get more band members, but no one wanted to join our band. That's the funny sort of... Yeah, that is the real line. Like, we had a drummer who said he would be in our band, but he was also in another band, and he said that he was like, we'd be his second priority.
Yeah.
And as soon as he said that, we were like, no, don't bother. We don't want it then. So I went round Isaac's house with, I'm a drummer as well, so I had a drum kit. So I went round his house with some drums, and we were struggling to write songs without a drum beat. It kind of just felt a bit like no energy. So I brought my drums around, and Isaac's got this like natural talent for any instrument. He's never had a lesson, but you know, he can play guitar competently. He can play piano, anything.
That's amazing.
It's just in him. He's just like an amazing musician. And I was just like, use these drums to keep a beat whilst we write. And then we wrote a song within half an hour, and it just never changed.
Wow.
So it was all, that's why I sort of have always, especially when I was a bit younger, resented the comparison to other two pieces. Because in my humble opinion, 90% of two pieces are a singer-songwriter and a drummer. And that's not what we are. We're a 50-50 partnership band.
How do you write?
Just, it's always different, but it's always half and half. So, like, I'll have an idea for a riff. Isaac's really good at structures, and he'll always make sense of what I'm doing or say we should go here, and then I'll have ideas. So for instance, a song like Magnolia on our album, I was watching a TV show about interior design and was listening to someone rant on about the color magnolia, and I wrote down magnolia. I was like, that's interesting. And then so I go to Isaac, and he's like the writer, so I say, I've had this idea for a song using the word magnolia. It's a great word, and the idea is that everyone just paints their house magnolia because no one else knows what to do. We just conform to this color idea. And then he pulls his phone out and he goes, I was writing these lyrics on the way to practice today. And he was like, giant faces are smiling at us, call the number on the side of the bus, all I wanted to be was attractive and carefree. So then we've got these starting points, and we merge them together. So I don't, strictly speaking, write lyrics, but there are a lot of moments throughout the album where I'll chip in a word, or like chokehold. We couldn't think of the... We originally it was called firm hold because it was about hairspray, but people thought it sounded like bumhole. And now we did chokehold, and people think it sounds like Joe Cole. So, but yeah, so we're in the studio trying to think of different words, and I'll be like, chokehold. So, and also we've got really good at telling each other what we don't like. If Isaac says, Isaac can say to me, I don't like that guitar bit, or play it more simply, and I'll say the same to him. It's really, I don't know how other bands do it, but we're a real partnership.
That, do you know what, that is the hardest thing in the world to do with anyone, is tell them what you don't like, I think. And also to say no to it's not negative though, because it always ends up with a positive result, but that is the hardest thing, isn't it,
when someone,
and that must be horrific when you're in a band and you're trying to write a song and you think you've got the perfect bit. You've got to trust each other a lot.
And you've got I've got this sort of rule as well, where if I'm not sure, I'll go with it. Because just to say no when you're not sure is unfair, because sometimes Isaac has amazing ideas that maybe I don't even like. Yeah. You just have to sort of... It's a really tough balance. There's a few songs on the record, Lives They Wish They Had and Bugs, that I hated. I was just like, they're not good enough. And they've turned out to be two of my favourite songs on the album. And it's about trying to sort of persevere with things that you don't think are good. And the more music you write, the harder it gets. Because when we were first ever writing music, we weren't self-conscious.
Do you listen to the same... it's weird when you get older. A bit more self-conscious stuff happens, isn't it?
Yeah, and when there's pressure on it and there's nothing... As you get older, like, there's just... You think about everything in a different way.
Do you listen to the same music on the tour bus or wherever you... It's not the same, is it, on tour buses now? Because you've got headsets and you can listen to your own music. But do you like the same things, you two?
What, as each other?
Yeah.
We have a crossover point. So, like, in the middle is, like, punk, singer-songwriter. One of the biggest things that me and Isaac share a mutual love of is singer-songwriters.
Right.
But not, like... popular ones, more like, you know, Ed Sheeran. I was thinking about saying not Ed Sheeran, but I felt bad. Sorry. Elliot Smith.
Yeah.
Leonard Cohen. Bright Eyes, who's Conor Oberst. These sort of off-center, like mopey maybe, singer-songwriters. Did I say Daniel Johnston?
No.
Yeah. Things like that, like really sort of introverted...
Right.
It's like an escape from what we do. And then I've got a sort of a soft spot for more like of the like pop punk bands like Green Day, and I grew up listening to like Blink-182. Whereas Isaac's way more into hip hop than I am, and sort of he halfway into his hip hop back catalogue I lose interest, whereas he keeps going. He's really into if a song has the same beat on it through the whole song, for me, I get bored, whereas he really loves that stuff. And krautrock, he's really into sort of 5 minutes of the same guitar riff looping.
All right.
So but then every now and then we'll play something to each other and we'll surprise each other.
Mm.
One of my favourite stories is Fleetwood Mac, which he wouldn't like to hear.
Go on.
So he wasn't sure about Fleetwood. His dad's got an amazing music collection. Like his vinyl collection is probably like 3,000 or 4,000 vinyls. And Dave wasn't sure about Fleetwood Mac. Because I bought... It was back in the day when you could buy... This was only like 5 years ago, but you could still buy vinyls in charity shops and find great stuff.
Yeah.
And I found Rumours and I was like, right, I'm going to listen to... Get into this, because my parents said they liked it and they don't usually like music that much. And it was amazing. I thought it was like the best thing I'd ever heard. And I was like, Dave, what do you think of Rumours? And he was like, I'm not sure about Fleetwood Mac. I was like, all right. Dave's Isaac's dad's, by the way. And then... Isaac was like, I don't like Fleetwood Mac. So I feel like it could have come from his dad. And then 6 months later, I caught him listening to Everywhere. And
great song.
And I was like, I thought you didn't like Fleetwood Mac. And he was like, oh no, I was wrong. I do actually really love them. And yeah, so.
That's what I love. I cannot imagine you two listening to Everywhere.
At the moment, I just
can't imagine it.
At the moment, one of the songs I listen to the most is like, I discover bits, but because I'm really into albums. So Rumours got me. And then Tango in the Night. And now I'm listening to the actual album Fleetwood Mac, and Landslide, I think, is my favourite Fleetwood Mac song ever.
I don't know it. I'm going to make a note of that and listen to it, Landslide. I like Everywhere. That's a good song. I'm not a massive Fleetwood Mac fan, if I'm honest with you. But I like all that sort of stuff. Like, I got into ELO not so long ago, and Supertramp and stuff like that. They're just good tunes.
Yeah.
And you sort of kind of slightly hide them away. But
well, it's also that... I always have so many like internal battles, whether do I want to be a band that says something? Do I want to be a band that gets remembered? And in reality, you don't have that much control over what kind of band you're going to be perceived as. It just happens. But those songs that people know but don't realise they know is quite admirable.
Like
you put on lots of Fleetwood Mac stuff and everyone will know it, even if they don't know they know it.
I think if I was in a band, I've got no musical ability at all, I'd want to look out on a sea of people moving. That would be my most important thing, which is what you create. And, you know, being a huge fan of things like The Specials and Madness and all that lot, they're dance bands, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Specials. If you go to one of their gigs, fortunately, they reformed enough so I could see them all. But they're just bouncing up and down, and it's like, and like your gigs are like that, they're powerful, there's energy going on, and I love those. So if I was in a band, I'd want energy like you guys produce.
Yeah, and sometimes I have daydreams of like singer songwriter acoustic or whatever, but watching people stood still is heartbreaking. Even if it's good and it's getting received well, it's just not the same buzz. We're looking out at your crowd and them going,
yeah.
It's just like,
I might be making this up, but I swear I read somewhere Bono saying the only problem with his band is people don't dance to the tracks. And it's like, I don't know, do people dance to U2? I suppose they sway a bit. But I went to a U2 gig and it's not like a Specials gig, I'll tell you that.
No.
Another thing. So it doesn't, or one of yours, that's for certain. And also, quickly talking about music, you when you were on our show, you said you were a fan of All Saints when you were younger. I like the fact that you admit that, which is
they're
cool.
Definitely, I think they're the best girl band of all time. So after that interview, we did a week's promo going to lots of record stores, playing gigs and stuff. And we were just in a car with our tour manager. It was like the smallest sort of travel unit we've had in a long time. And every day we were putting like the classic All Saints tracks on. And they're just timeless.
Weren't they lovely on the show?
They're so nice.
I sort of know them all a bit throughout the years, but getting all four of them on the show, they were just so... And I love that when bands come around again, they're glad to be there because they're enjoying it second time round as well, and they were just lovely, weren't they? Charming, hey, lovely.
We've always been of the opinion as well, just to admit to, it's part of our band's personality, admit your guilty pleasures and just embrace it. Things like the Robbie Williams thing is true. Like, I grew up and my parents aren't really musically diverse, but Robbie Williams' album came out, it was always in the car, so right. For me, I grew up listening to Robbie Williams.
Well, one of the brilliant things, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast far too many times, but I'm going to tell you again. I interviewed Lemmy once, and I was trying to get him to slag off Kylie Minogue or something. Yeah, my XFM days, trying to go, woo. And he said something like, how many songs have you had out? She's doing well. She's making money. She's recording. She's getting hits. Leave her alone. And I just thought, wow, Lemmy's sticking up for Kylie. It was fantastic. And I love that. You know, when bands are like, well, Jesus, what are you doing? You know, because I haven't written a record before in my life, so, and I have no ability to do it. And I just thought that's kind of cool.
It is nice. Like 99% of the time, I think people that are really good at what they do tend to be quite nice.
Yeah, you're 100% true. That when you're good at what you do, you look around and you're not angry and bitter with everybody else.
Yeah.
When you're struggling a bit with your talent, you get bitter and twisted.
Exactly.
Yeah, very good. And also when we had Nick Appleton on, she said that she owned some of your art with her husband, isn't it, Liam Howard?
Yeah.
And Simon Rimmer owns some of your art as well. It's very good, your art. What's going with that? What are you doing with it?
So I'm just, at the moment, because I can't get to my studio a lot to paint, I keep a sketchbook and I'm doing a lot of drawing plans for future paintings. I've got a series of paintings that haven't been seen yet. And I've been designing like T-shirts for like friends' bands. But I've got a set of prints.
What's Young Lovers Club? That's a fashion brand.
It was sort of like Young Lovers Club was just like, I wanted to make T-shirts when I was university. Like, I've always just been interested in doing stuff like that. And I had quite a successful run of it. Like, it got stocked in Selfridges. And it got to a point where it sort of was stylistically one thing and it had its own voice. And like, I was also doing the painting, becoming a dad and that. So it went on the back burner a bit. But it's always something that I can return to, making clothes. And I like the name YLC. But it's kind of my mentality that if I like something, I just do it. Like, I'm planning to put out a book of photography soon and also do a photography exhibition. When I say soon, like within the next 3 years.
Right.
But I just have a lot of interests and I don't ever feel... I don't have that barrier that I probably should have. Like, when I do something, I'm just like, well, obviously I'm going to do that. Whereas like some people, it takes a little bit longer to, like, my girlfriend's a real perfectionist. So when she does something, it's way better than what I would do. But I would just put things out because it's how I get energy. So.
But it must be pretty cool when people are buying your art.
It's amazing. And Liam Howlett and Nick have, Natalie.
Sorry, yeah, it's Natalie. Yeah, Natalie.
They have 4 paintings by me, which is just incredible. Like the first time I heard Liam from the Prodigy, because I didn't realise he was married to an All Saint at that point.
Yeah.
It was just like, I've heard Liam from the Prodigy wants to buy one of my paintings.
Yeah.
And he just started collecting it. And it, yeah, it's a surreal feeling that someone wants to live with your work as well. And it's like really, it's really rewarding and sort of validating. But yeah, I'm releasing a series of prints soon. And I'm also, next year, there'll be an art exhibition again. I'm just trying to time it all so it doesn't feel too rushed.
Mm.
I want it all, I want to put 100% into everything I do rather than trying to like get by on like 80% on a few things.
Mm. It's tough, I suppose, when you're juggling it all. You know, you've got to prioritize. I suppose the band comes first.
Yeah.
Especially as you're about to go on tour. Where are you going on tour? You're going to the USA, aren't you?
Yeah, we start, so at the end of the month, we fly to the States and we're there for about 10 days. Then we fly to Scandinavia, do a week there, then get on another plane and do 3 or 4 days in Russia, then come back to Europe, go around Europe, then go to the UK, and then at the moment we're set to finish in December.
How are you received in Russia?
Second biggest territory.
Brilliant. Why?
So for some reason, we got there really early. A lot of people leave it quite late to go to Russia. But our manager manages a band that do really well in Russia. So he has experience with the place. And I think there's a lot of people are worried about nothing in a sense. There's a lot of, it's like, it's new territory for a lot of people. Whereas he sent us out there with our first album campaign.
Mm.
And we turned up and we'd sold out a 500 cap venue. And we didn't even know that we had fans there.
Mm.
So this time I think the 2 venues we're playing are something like 2,000 and 1,000 capacity. Brilliant. And they're like,
Moscow.
Yeah, we'll sell them out. Moscow and St. Petersburg.
Excellent. I've not been to St. Petersburg. I've been to Moscow. What do you make of it?
It's amazing. And the fans are like no one else in the world. It's like, I find Russia a little bit like a New York on steroids. Like the buildings are like twice as big and the roads are twice as wide. It's still not, it's not European, it's different.
That's what I loved about it when I went there. It reminded me when I was a kid traveling around and you go to Spain or Italy or somewhere and it'd be, wow, it's so different, everything's different. And now everything's similar-ish, globalization. You go to Russia, it's really different. It's just a really different place, and they've got different attitudes and they think differently if you talk to them. And I was like, this is really, they're different people. I quite liked it.
And that's what's fascinating about touring, and that it can't be sort of underestimated, is how much your mind changes when you tour, how much more sort of open-minded and thoughtful you become because you meet all these people from all different walks of life.
Yeah.
And they're just humans.
So I discussed this with Frank Turner. I said, it's really weird when people tell artists, especially musicians and stuff, to not get political. They're the people who should be political because you're the ones who are seeing the world. You're actually going and meeting the people and actually performing for them. You're seeing what's happening in the world and the world's getting a smaller place. So it gives you more of a right, I think, to spout politics at us.
Yeah, exactly. I'd agree.
What's how many gigs are you doing in America? Just a couple, is it, or something?
Yeah, I think it's,
you got to go out and live there, haven't you?
Yeah, that's what's hard. And I talk to a lot of friends that are in bands and artists, and they're like, oh, you know, we play massive shows in the UK and we go over there and it just feels like it's pointless. But in reality, I think in the first year we were a band, we played London about 25 times.
Right.
So to get to a point where you can play Brixton or Ali Pali, we've probably played London like over 100 times, maybe. Yeah. How can you expect to turn up in New York and for them just to instantly sell out venues? Obviously, it does happen. Bands that have big singles, when that happens. But if you're like us and you're sort of, you have to just keep chipping away. Yeah. It is really tough, though, but it's good.
All right, there's some questions I ask everyone who comes to my podcast. Can I do them with you?
Yes.
What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
I didn't have a lot of people, like, I was thinking about this question before I came in, and I didn't have a lot of, like, poignant sit-down talks when I was a kid about, I don't remember anyone giving me, like, advice strictly.
Yeah.
But I think one thing I've already said in the podcast is if you put the effort in, you get it out, I think, 90% of the time. But one of the biggest things I've found to be quite useful in my life is admitting you're wrong. I really respect people that admit they're wrong and hold your hands up and just own it, and then you can move forward 10 times quicker. A lot of people still struggle to talk, and that's something that I've obviously never had a problem with. So, but talking is a big thing, and admitting you're wrong, it makes life easier.
I think putting effort in especially relates to being a parent, you know.
Yeah.
Having three kids, if you put the effort in to be bothered to sit and make sure they read and all that, it comes back to you. It really does. It's just amazing watching them grow.
I believe that. Yeah, everything you do, if you put effort in, it helps.
I've just taught my daughter last week to ride. Last week or the week before, to ride a bike. My youngest one. Now we go out cycling. It's amazing. You get something back as well because I can go cycling with my kid now. It's really good. It's really good. All right. What's the biggest mistake you've made? Oh, I might be dropping this question soon because everyone struggles with this one.
Mine are quite trivial, but just
go on.
Just outfits. Just trying too hard. So if you're gonna
tell me about
if
it.
If you're going to be in the limelight, the thing you learn is that Google Images is not your friend. I feel good that I've tried a lot of stuff out, but I really have got some pretty bad looks over my time already.
Yeah. Is there any that you remember most? Jen, can we just shut that back door? Because the planes are getting really loud here.
I wore a tracksuit to the Mercury Awards and everyone else was just wearing suits, and at the time I thought it was a good idea, but I looked back and I just felt like should have probably just worn
a
suit.
I love that though.
Yeah,
I think that's brilliant. I think that's one of those ones that I just think is great when everybody else is in a suit and you turn up in a tracksuit. At least you get noticed.
I feel like the idea was good, but the execution wasn't good enough.
Okay. Any life hacks, travel tips or something like that?
It's another hard one, isn't it?
About a cooking one, apart from cutting your sandwiches.
I guess it's really boring, but have really good knives. When you go around someone's house and they've got like blunt knives and you can't chop anything, you're not going to enjoy cooking if you can't cut things properly. And good, just basically, my mum's always just taught me to just invest in your kitchenware, like decent pots and pans.
Yeah.
If you have really terrible things, the outcome's going to be terrible as well, probably.
I genuinely, when I cook, line it up like I'm on a TV show now. So if I'm cooking something and it's lots of various ingredients, I do it like Simon Rimmer has it on the show. I have little things there, and then it makes cooking a more pleasurable experience because it's all set it all up, set up for success, and then cook it, and that's a much better way of doing it. Is there a book you recommend?
I think if it's one of those cliche, you probably had it all the time, but I really think everyone should read 1984 by George Orwell.
Yeah, it's a good book.
It's one of those ones that, like, I feel like everyone's read, but I'm always surprised by how many people I meet that haven't.
Well, saying that, I read Animal Farm years ago and then reread that in 1984 when my kids had to do it at school.
Yeah.
And they were reading it and I thought, I might as well give it another go. And they are brilliant, aren't they?
Yeah.
Absolute works of art. Yeah, really good. Okay, what's it like being famous?
I don't think I am.
You are.
The level of fame I've got is quite comfortable. It's quite strange at times. I don't know if I... It's like... It's weird. The weirdest one is when most people in a room have no idea who you are, but someone recognises you, then you can feel everyone else in the room going, who's that?
Oh, I get that all the time. Whereas it's horrible, isn't it?
At least if you were really well known, at least people would... But I feel people like looking at you going, who do you think you are?
That's what happened to me on the tube the other day. People in London just leave you alone. And on the tube the other day, this woman, she went to me. I always get stuff happening to me on the tube. She went to me, I know you. How do I know you? Are you a friend of someone? So I went, no. I said, I'm on TV. That's it. That's it. It's my favourite show.
She obviously knew you well then.
Yeah, if it was my favourite show. And she goes, can I have a picture with you? And I'm like on a tube and everyone's looking. And I'm going, all right then. You don't want to be the one who says no. So then everybody else is doing exactly that. Who the hell is that?
Yeah.
It's like they're all trying to recognize you. It's so embarrassing.
And I've had people who like have asked for photos after seeing someone ask for a photo but not knowing who you are.
Yeah.
And they go, yeah, you must, you, I had someone outside a gig in Kingston and a fan came up and asked for a photo, and then this other guy went, are you a blogger? What, you do something, don't you? And I was like, no mate, I'm no one. And he was like, yeah you are. He was like, you on YouTube? And I was just like, nah. And then he was like, can I have a photo? I was like, you don't even know who I am. It's weird, the fame thing, but it's been amazing. And I've had some incredible experiences, like meeting people, and I appreciate it, I think. I'm scared of it getting any bigger.
Yeah.
I'm not scared, I'm just apprehensive. Like, I do like my own space. Yeah. The family aspect of it weirds me out a bit. I know a lot of people have a really strict view about their kids and fame and whether you expose them to it or not. And I'm really undecided about it all.
My personal opinion, if you want to know it, is it's going to be tough. Everybody's online now, and it's going to be tough to protect your children at the best of times. I'm just not concerned about it. As someone said to me once, if you act like a normal person around your career, then you'll be a happier person. And I think I just do what all my mates do. They all put pictures up, they do whatever. Yeah. I just act trying to, I know I've got... on Instagram, I don't know, I've got 70,000 or something, 70,000. So they've only got 100, but it's just, that's my life, so I just get on with it. I don't know.
I think people appreciate the honesty as well, and I think I've always said when Bart gets to an age where I can discuss it with him, if he then goes, I don't want to be part of it, then that's fine.
Yeah, so my older kids go, no, don't put that online. They say they need proof now of everything that I put online. They need approval of everything I put online. But it's only vanity for them.
Yeah.
But that's what they want. All right, final question. What's the meaning of life?
It's love, isn't it? I think love is like the emotion that... That's so hard. I've never really pondered this too much because it seems too infinite to understand. I don't know if there is a meaning, just creativity and love, I guess. Experience. What do you think?
Don't know. That's what I'm asking everyone who comes on the podcast. I'm not sure. Do you think there's an afterlife?
I don't know if I do. I've always been... like this. I'm really interested with having a child and seeing how, like, I've made Bart aware of music, and he's into music because I've bought him a drum kit. I take him to gigs, but I've always been mistrusting of religion. Mm. And where does that come from? My parents haven't brainwashed me. I have these instincts for things. And so being very like, why do I have to sing this hymn in assembly? Why do I have to say amen?
Yeah.
But like, I've always been like that.
So, yeah.
So I feel worried about believing in an afterlife.
Well, interesting you talk about Bart. Go on.
I worry about like believing in it because then I feel like I'm aligning with religion a bit, right, which I hate so much. But I think it would be crazy that it all just went dark.
Though, what was happening to Bart before Bart was Bart?
This is another crazy thing. I really believe this. Bart was in the womb on tour.
Yeah.
He was in utero at 8 months on tour with us, and he heard Isaac's sound check every day. And ever since Bart's been born, he's so comfortable around Isaac. And we think it's because he knows his voice, because Isaac spent more time around Bart in utero than anyone apart from me did.
But the point I'm making is, before you fertilized an egg,
yeah,
there was nothing, apparently, or we don't ever worry what happened before then, yet we always worry what happened afterwards. So there's sort of, there must have been something
from me.
Is there something before, or does it just arrive that it's one of those things that people never discuss what happens before, they only discover what happens afterwards. But
nature nurture as well. So they could come from my nature, and also what position of the... Yeah. Who knows?
No one does, which is why there's so many religions discussing it non-stop.
Do you believe there's an afterlife?
Sadly not. No, I'd like to. And I'm asking a lot of people on this podcast the same question. And at the moment, I just believe we come and then we go. But I do think it's very tough. You can't get rid of anything because we're all chemicals and energy. So once it all goes, it just...
Animals are mental, though. When you really think about, like, chihuahuas and why there's a... why that cat is here. You know what I mean? And reincarnation is a very attractive thing to me.
Yeah.
The one that you can't explain is those weird kids that believe that they've lived before in Victorian times. And I'm a real big fan of like the sort of Romany gypsy sort of tarot card reading, all that, and like the belief in old souls and new souls. I had someone who had like was like descended from gypsies, and she believed she could contact
right
at uni the afterlife, and I was told I was a new soul, and like, I don't know, I find all that stuff quite attractive, but I don't know if I'm just finding the allure of it.
I think we all do. We all want to believe there's more, and this is why we're all there's so many religions in the world. I think that's yeah. That's the whole key to it. Anyway, listen, thank you so much for doing the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Act of Fear and Love, third album out now. And if you want to get tickets for the tour, just go online, I suppose, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's all nearly sold out, so right. Make sure you get on it.
If you want to do it, get on it now. Thank you so much. Best of luck with the tour.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed that. I hope you did too. I was just thinking, actually, during that interview, we get such a diverse selection of guests on this podcast. I hope you lot all enjoy
it. Oh, you know, if you're looking for a podcast with direction, this isn't the place to come. It's basically inside Tim's brain. It's like, well, I like slaves. I like this. I like that.
It's just a reminder. What we've decided to do on this is just choose people that we think are interesting and subjects that we think are interesting. We're not going for ratings. We're not going for the biggest hits. We
like
can
ratings.
Get. Yeah, but we're not going. We don't. No. It's not what is driving us. What's driving us is we think if they're interesting, then we're going to have a good conversation with them. So hopefully, even if you look at one of the podcasts, you think, "Who the hell's that?" Bother to listen, because generally they're interesting stuff.
That's how I got into podcasts. I would look for people I liked,
yeah.
and listen to them interviewed, and then I'd go, I really like, quite like that interviewer as well, so I'll go back and listen to other people.
Yeah.
So I'd listen to all the other people I liked or knew that they'd done. So I'm thinking Marc Maron, maybe, someone like that. And then I subscribed and then just listened to everything he puts out, and I get to listen to stuff I never would have thought of listening to.
But we might have got it wrong. So please give us feedback on this. If you're enjoying it and you like the diversity, you like the fact that we've got loads of different guests on all the time and different subjects, let us know. Or if you're tuning in and tuning out, let's say we just want feedback. Basically, it's always nice to get some good feedback, and also it's good to get some constructive criticism feedback as well. It's not nice, actually, but we'll accept it. It's horrible getting criticism, but now if you want to criticize us, we'll accept that as well. We just enjoy doing
them. I won't read it.
Yeah. So look, keep it coming in, and hopefully you're enjoying our podcast, as we say. We'll be back again hopefully next Monday with something else. We don't know what.
Probably a special.
Actually, we're doing one soon, so hopefully we'll be putting ours out.
No one's got any problems. Everyone's all right now.
If you've got any problems, make sure you send them in to us. The address is dearlovejoypodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet me @TimLovejoy. If you've got a problem, send it in, because we're going to start doing those again. We've just been, honestly,
we don't ask for money on this podcast. We don't make just people problems. Pay for scripts. We just want your problems.
We want your problems.
We want your misery and your problems. We don't want you to have them, but if you've got them,
and
we must admit
we've been a bit slack on those ones, because various reasons. One, the World Cup happened. Two, the heat wave happened.
Yeah.
And three, we just had a backlog of specials that we were doing. So, we're sort of freeing ourselves up a bit at the moment. I say that. We've put so many guests coming up. Anyway, I hope you're all enjoying it. Please let us know. For the time being, peace and love, joy.
Bye.